Hello and welcome to The Hours. I'm Tyler, joined by my friend, business partner, and co-basketball coach, Claire Murphy. She's tuning in from Ontario, Canada. I'm in Phoenix, Arizona. And this is The Hours, where we spend hours with coaches, really diving into the art and the science of coaching. We've got a great one for you today. We're going to be talking about how to replace your drills with games. Claire, when you first started playing basketball and you were a player, Claire was an excellent player, by the way. I mean, you were heading to practice as a player that loved the game of basketball. What did your typical practice look like as you're coming up and competing, even like all the way through your college career?
Stationary dribbling for an hour and a half. No. At camps, I feel like my mind goes to camps first as well as practice, but camps were very similar to practice. There would be like your not even dynamic warm-up, honestly, when I started at the beginning of my playing career, it would be like static stretching. Then we're moving into stationary ball handling. Then we're moving into three-man weave. Then we're moving into shell. Then we're moving into, you know, walking through 5-on-0 offense or 5-on-0 transition. I'd say this was every single level from youth, middle school, high school, maybe changed a little bit in university, but was still pretty similar. And all the way until the last 20 minutes and then 5-on-5 scrimmage. So pretty standard across the board throughout the years.
But I would say that my experience was very similar. And so therefore, when I first started to get into coaching, I was like, oh, this is what a practice is supposed to look like. And so I just duplicated that. I did it the exact same way, right? I just coached the way that I was coached. And I think a lot of us do that. And that's really why we are doing this podcast, is why we created Savvy Coaching, is to share that there is another way. Very few of us, once we finish our playing career, actually get to go and be coached again or to feel what it's like to be coached by another coach or be in another practice. And so we get very siloed. Here was our coach. We coach like them. We pepper in a couple new things, but like our foundation is very similar. And so the beauty of us getting to interact with thousands of coaches and in our community, the beauty of hundreds of coaches all across the world getting to interact is you get out of your silo. You see there are other ways. And when you see how many other ways there are to coach, I think it really allows you to the freedom to coach like an artist and not just think like, okay, I have to fit in this new idea within this very rigid structure, but rather I can do things the way that I want to do them. I mean, just the way that there's different players. I mean, Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant were such different players in both forces and successful. I mean, there's different ways to be successful. The same thing in coaching. There's different ways. There is no one right way to coach. We don't think savvy has the right way to coach. Really, savvy is about how can you embrace and explore all the different tools that are out there. And today, when we talk about how you can replace your drills with games, you know, one thing I was asking as a player is like, as a player, I can't remember when I ever got excited about a drill. You know, I got excited when there was a chance to win. And I think that the most competitive athletes, the ones that are the most successful, they have that competitive spirit where once it's time to win, they elevate their effort, performance, their focus. And that's the difference between a drill and a game is can you win? It's not even necessarily a different movement or, you know, a different time length or whatever. It's really, can you make it winnable? And that's when your high achievers rise to the occasion. And that's really what we're trying to do in practice is we're trying to transfer and improve skills to transfer to games. So can I win? So we're going to try to help you replace your drills with games as much as possible. Claire, I've got three that I want to share, but I want to first ask you this. What is a common observation that you find pretty common across basketball right now as a trend? Not just with coaches, just like that's different than when you, because you're what, 15 years removed from maybe your like middle school, high school development. Would that be accurate?
Yep. Correct. Math.
Okay.
The math is mathing. Yep.
Math is mathing. All right. So 15 years ago, your experience, things that you found valuable as you were developing that you feel like is different now. What would be one of your observations across the basketball world?
I think just the exposure to other ways. There's still some hesitancy. There's still some closed-mindedness. There's still some silo. But I think even just like the fact that YouTube blew up like when I was in high school or getting cell phones, like just the access and exposure to international basketball is massive, like has opened people's mind to different ways to play the game. And I don't think I saw that. Like, I remember having an international teammate in college, and it was just like, no, what you're doing is wrong. How you've learned how to play in Europe and in South America is wrong, and you must adapt, and there's nothing we can learn from you. As opposed to now, like, ooh, how can we work this in? How can we enhance our team's style of play? That, I think, is a game changer. And I saw it as a player, but then also saw it in coaching. So this would have been, I don't know, probably 10 years ago that I went to my first super clinic with Canada Basketball. And there was a coach from Spain, and he did like a little workshop on open face deny, like chest to ball deny. And people were livid. Like the coaches were just, they're like, that's wrong. You're in the wrong stance. I do not accept this. I don't even want to hear it. It was like a visceral reaction to it. Whereas now, some people may feel strongly about it and coach one way or another or play one way or another, but there's less of that visceral, you are right, I am wrong. We're just like, don't like that style. Not for me. So that's changed. Yeah. It's the trend right now.
No. Okay, that's good. And this is how I want to connect this to game, because I actually believe that function is most important. It's functional to play more games based on the climate of basketball now versus 10 or 20 years ago, when many of us who are now coaches were players. And I think that's one reason why you should play more games. It's there's more openness to new ideas, and games allow a freedom to incorporate new ideas. A lot of times drills are to drill one way to do it. Right? We want to drill, you know, high hand, high foot, closed stance, deny. We want to drill that. This is the only way you can actually deny a pass. So let's drill it into our players by doing it over and over and over again. When there seems to be only a right and a wrong, drilling is a good tool to use. But when there are more ways to successfully either discourage or steal a pass, then let's play a game with a clear objective. And let's say, I don't care how you do it, get this done. I think that there's been that same progression in shooting. 20 years ago, there was one way to shoot, right? Everyone needs to line up and do this together and do that together, and it should look the same. Whereas now, I believe that most coaches and players are embracing the facts that there are multiple ways to successfully pass it to the basket, deliver the ball into the hoop. Because we have more video, we have more access. So all of those things lend themselves to playing more games. Games lead to more freedom. I love that. I've got three more reasons why you as a coach should embrace replacing your drills with games. Here's another one. Players don't play pickup as much now as they used to. When 10, 20 years ago, like there was an opportunity to get creative and experiment. There were open gyms. You would go to the playground. You'd play outside. That doesn't happen as much. We could talk about all the reasons why it doesn't happen as much. There are a lot of them, including there's more opportunities to play basketball year round now than there were 20 years ago with all the club and AAU opportunities. Another reason is there's more access to actual like indoor organized gym space. And of course, these gyms are popping up all over. Whereas like the only thing you could do is go down the street to Jimmy's house or to the local park and play on the double rims because it was your only option. There are more options now. Another reason is, and we'll come in later, is like the rise of skills training. You have limited hours in the day. You could just go play pickup, you know, until your mom calls you in for dinner, or you have a scheduled lesson with your skills trainer. So with players not having like that time to get in the sandbox and experiment with like low impact winning and losing in the open gyms and the rec games, well, you got to play more games in your practice and you have to give them that time to experiment. It's imperative to development and they just don't get it very much, right? They're doing drills in practice. They're playing their high school season. And then, you know, they're getting yelled at by their AAU coach so they can win a game. And so the parents keep paying that coach some money. Okay, here's anything you want to add to that one, Claire, before I go to my next reason why you should play more games?
No, I got one, but I'll wait for you to finish. And
okay, cool. All right, here's the second one. Your pain will determine your change. Like a lot of times we don't change until we feel the pain of staying the same. Well, coaches, you're feeling the pain and you may not know yet that the change is to play more games. Here's the pain. When I talk to coaches and they complain on a lack of basketball IQ in their players, a lack of especially what I would call cooperative IQ. So players don't know how to play off the basketball. The players don't understand like help on defense, anticipation. They have trouble getting matched up. Players don't understand like over that they're over dribbling and playing in isolation, playing without advantage. They don't understand how to find the hot hand, right? They don't understand shot selection. So these are all things that I would call cooperative IQ, team IQ. It's the greatest pain point that coaches identify across the board. Well, the only time you can develop that cooperative team IQ is when you play a game. You're not going to develop that type of IQ in drills or in one-on-one skills training, which is where most players think they're going for development. And so you have to create these games because it's a shared intelligence, and that shared intelligence changes based on who you're sharing it with, right? If Claire and I go play two-on-two, we're going to develop some shared intelligence based on each other's unique strengths and tendencies. But the moment I go play with Mark two-on-two, there's a whole different shared intelligence there. I mean, that's why, you know, talk about, oh, you have a really good two-man game between Jokic and Jamal Murray, or to backtrack between Stockton and Malone. There's a shared intelligence developed by playing lots of games together over time. More games in practice will develop the shared intelligence between your specific players in that specific season in those specific scenarios. So you need games to do that. Drills don't do that. Claire, anything to add to that one?
Oh my gosh, shared. I feel like we need a full episode on shared intelligence. We've done a month with our members on basketball IQ, but I feel like shared IQ is such an underrated, untalked about thing that is massive. Like, we talk about seat races and how to get the best lineup and who actually fits like your roles and your depth chart. But man, shared intelligence, that's, I got to write that down to dive.
It's like oftentimes your best lineup may not be your five best players. It often isn't, because those five best players don't have the same shared IQ as these other five players, you know? And then developing that shared IQ is a key as well. Yeah. Huge. Okay. Games do that. Drills don't do that. Not nearly as much, because that shared intelligence, just like with AI, right? How do you build AI? You need massive data set, right? You can't train an artificial intelligence. You can't train any intelligence, real or artificial, without a huge data set. The more games you play, the more you feed into that data set. The more you drill, a drill is even more constrained. You're going to get the same inputs over and over and over again. Right? We're drilling A and B, A and B, A and B. And so all you get is A and B. But when you open it up to the infinite inputs of a game, well, then you get the quantum universe there. And that's how you build intelligence. Okay. Shared intelligence. Number three, another reason to play more games in practice, and like free games, which we'll talk about sandbox and war games here in a moment. Let me make a note there, because I don't think we've talked about that much recently, is the rise of the skills training industry. It's massive business. Anyone that finishes playing basketball that doesn't want to work a real job will become a skills trainer. And it's so easy to become a skills trainer because everybody's better than somebody. And if somebody's better than a five-year-old child, they can charge that five-year-old child's parents money to skills train them, to basically watch them dribble and rebound for them for an hour. And I'm not hating on skills trainers. I'm hating on what it's done to the game. Because now players are overtrained, but they're under-skilled. And I'm talking about skill as anything that can be learned. They may be trained to dribble, but they're not skilled enough to utilize ball handling in a game with shared IQ to actually create an advantage. They just have a move like, oh, I have the ball in my hands, I better use my step back, which actually shows a lack of intelligence based on time, score, shot selection, space, you know, what the outcomes you're trying to achieve are, all those things. And with these resources, like traditionally, practices would have, like Claire said, skill development, stationary ball handling in practices. Well, the only voice of authority in a young player's life 20 years ago was their coach. There wasn't a skills trainer. They didn't have access to every skills trainer in the world on YouTube and on Instagram. Like, they didn't have the information. So like, players didn't know how to dribble or shoot a basketball. They had no clue unless their individual team coach told them. Now there's too much information. And so with the rise of that, like, as coaches, why do you even try to say, do it this way? Why add into the noise and the voices? Instead, just provide a games approach that will help them hopefully apply those things that they're learning on their own or with their resources. I think games allow for the filtering out of voices to determine what the individual player is going to prioritize, as opposed to adding another voice into it. I had Camille, who we both know, came back from playing professionally in France, and her coach in France was a different shooting voice than I have been. And she adopted what he was saying because he was her coach. He determined her playing time. And so I'm like, gosh, I don't even know if it's worth me saying anything to you because I don't want to add another voice into your head on what you should be doing. Most coaches don't do that. They just say what they think. And so like, I don't think there's value like in saying, no, do it this way as a coach. I think there's more value in saying, here's the outcome of the game that we're playing. Experiment and you determine what's the best way to achieve the outcome. And then a player might have the wherewithal and confidence to actually say no to something that a skills trainer or another coach or another YouTube video would say because it doesn't fit their authentic player profile. Okay, those are my three. I know, Claire, you said you had another one that you wanted to add in.
Yeah, I mean, well, my why is really the how, which I'll get to, but I do want to speak to just like the data set you're talking about and how games reveal your actual issues, right? If you have a skills trainer, which yes, there's value in those, wonderful, have a great person that you trust, but I hope that they are watching your games and that you're also playing games, both real live games, but then also games in practice or in a smaller group setting, because that's really going to reveal your actual issue as opposed to you didn't do this drill super well. So we're going to work on this drill instead, as opposed to here is factual data of the objective that we're talking about, the success in a game context, whether it's working or not, whether the IQ is matching the skill and you can execute in that game setting. And then you can take that back to break it down. So just so necessary. I know the people that I have trained individually or in small group settings, the way it works best is when I have seen them in game context as well. Like it's very much a pairing that goes together there. Yeah. And why I say that, so my why on games, like I said, is really the how to implement it. In drills, you are the teacher, which as a coach, that's just overwhelming. Like that is how you burn out, is if you are the voice and that is what they're learning from, it is all dependent on you. Setting up the right organization, giving the right feedback, you are the teacher and that's it. In games, the environment is the teacher. The whistle is the teacher. The score is the teacher. The time is the teacher. The constraints are the teacher. The teammates that you're playing with, they are the teacher. You get so much more feedback from that setting that your learning is then, you know, exponential, as opposed to a coach telling you what to do and when. So as a coach and a player, games are giving you much more data to work with and more realistic data to put it into play. And that is where the constraints-led approach has been a big question in our community lately. A lot of our members have been asking, okay, so I want to do more games, but I don't know which ones, or I have a drill or I have a game, but I'm not sure how it's teaching what I want. What do I put in place to make this functional? If we're not just going out there playing 5-on-5, scrimmaging, pickup, like what do games mean? And that is where we can do these little tweaks and add some more teachers into the games that we're using. And so I have five. I'm sure you might have some different ones, Tyler, but I think these cover the main ones. So I'd love to get.
I agree. Can we do this, Claire?
Yeah.
Let me give one bigger, really simple, and then you go through all five that can make it even better. I'll just give a big, simple framework. Then you can, these are five ways to even make this framework better. How's that sound?
Do it.
Okay. I can't remember what's the TLDR. I don't know what it stands for, but it's basically like the summary.
Too long, don't read.
Too long, don't read. Okay, here's the TLDR. If you're just like, hey, I trust you guys, and I want to do this game thing, here it is. Here's what you do, and I say that with all due respect and knowing that it's not exactly what you do, but here's what you do as a coach, because it's what most coaches do. Three steps: drill, drill, play. That's what Claire said. She grew up with. It's what I grew up with. It's what most coaches do. Right? You drill it. You drill another thing and then you play and you hope. You hope that the drills transfer to the games. But here's the problem. You don't know because you go drill, drill, play, done. And when you play a single game, you got what you got. a game is just a test for measurement. There's no progression. You don't know if they got better at those things or not. There's no comparison. Measurement is magic and you need measurement. So here's what you do instead. Instead of drill, drill, play, done, you go play, 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 done. And when you go play, 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 done, as you direct their attention through these five different ways that Claire is going to share with you, guess what you see from game one to game two to game three? You see improvement. You're actually able to measure and see, we actually got better at that thing. And your mind will be blown that you got better at rebounding without doing a rebounding drill. Your mind will be blown that you got better at matching up without doing shell drill. Your mind will be blown that you got better at running actions in neutral without drilling your actions. You and your players will see transformation, and that's when those skills being anything that can be learned, get internalized. It's just that simple. Get rid of drill, 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 done. Drill, 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 play, done, and start play, 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 done. And here's how.
Boom. Scoring, violations, time, spacing, and communication. Let me go into each one of these. Scoring, violations, time, spacing, communication. All of these can be tweaked in a way that emphasize what you want, but still put some sort of pressure, put game-like scenarios into play. And I will add a bonus. This isn't a how, but another why, is using games and adjusting these constraints allows players to feel comfortable with the organization and be able to lead it themselves without you sometimes and focus on the learning instead. When there's a new drill, a new organization, a new thing every single day, then they're focused on learning the organization and not learning the learning, not executing the basketball and improving. So use one game, change each one of these things a different day. They know what to do, but they're learning different things or improving on it. So bonus why on that.
Scoring. All right, you want to go through each one? And then I'll just like, you can explain it. Then I'll just give a specific example of how one could use that for what's the scenario? What does the coach want to get better at? I'll use the same objective for all five.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. All right. All right.
Should I go right into scoring? Is there anything else you want to say about scoring?
No, I'll intro scoring a little bit. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me give a bit of context. So scoring, I think of this as really your calendar. Like people say, show me your calendar, I'll show you your priorities. If you show me your scoring system, I'll show you your basketball priorities. So want more rebounds, assign points. Want better passes, assign points. Need players identifying a certain weakness, assign points to them executing that. Transition layups are killing you, make them a KO. So show me your scoring, show me your priorities.
All right, beautiful. I'm going to use, you want to improve your lock left defense, and specifically, you want to eliminate off the catch threes, open off the catch threes, which it's savvy we call sevens. So your objective this practice, like, gosh, we're giving it up too many sevens, too many off the catch threes. We got to eliminate it. So here's how we do it. We would actually make we're playing by ones and twos, but any off the catch three that is made is going to be a KO. It's going to be worth 5 points. We're playing 5 points. It ends the game. So you just tweak your scoring to make sure that they take that away. So then you don't work on your close off technique. You know, you're not working on, you know, where you stand and gap. You're just saying don't allow it, and all those things will happen.
Nice. Well said. All right. Number two, violations. This is really, you think natural consequences that happen when players do something you don't want them to do, but then exaggerate that positively or negatively. Violations could reward what you want to see, or punish what you want eliminated, giving or taking away points, or giving or taking away possessions, and progressing through more freedom as they earn it and teaching through the whistle there. Any examples, Tyler, for that?
Yeah, so another, you can hear a good defense. And we talk about defensive communications being early, loud, and often, using our shared language, you know, gap, snipe, lock, wall, jail. And so let's say we're playing a game of 3v3 cutthroat where we have multiple teams. If at any time a team rotates on without early, loud, and often communication, the violation is they just get kicked off the court. They don't even get to play, and the next team gets to come on. So the violation would be a failure to communicate, which is going to lead to our ability to take away those off the catch threes.
Beautiful. Time, pretty self-explanatory here, but there are inherent time constraints within a game, but sometimes we want to elevate or decrease those depending on the pace that you want to play with. You may want to race and get to the arcs at a certain time. You may want to hunt something in a certain time. You may want to get an action at a certain time. You may want a possession to last a certain time. So add those in, whether it's 1-on-1, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 5-on-5, add a time constraint in to add the pressure to play how you want to play in a game.
Beautiful. One way we do this in our race car games or our ping pong full court games is if the offensive team does score in the first 7 seconds, so we'll start a 7 second countdown right when the offensive team gains possession. If you do score in that first 7 seconds, you actually get a whole nother possession against the half court set defense. You get a bonus possession. So that's a way to use time as an additional constraint. You know, another one that we used before is our casino game is we'll actually start counting down from a 24 second shot clock, and you get the amount of points as are left on the shot clock. So like if you were to score immediately within 1 second, you would get 23 points. Whereas if you hit a buzzer beater, you would get 1 point. Right, so we call that casino. So those are two ways to use time as a constraint to get what you want, which is speed.
Yeah, man, I love that constraints actually make things more fun. Like, I'll share the other two, but even just you talking about it, I feel like shifts the framing from this negative thing of constraints and what we're not allowed to do, what we're being held back from. Ugh, you're trying to hold me back. You're trying to limit me. Whereas constraints lead to freedom and fun because you're just like, oh, dang, how do I problem solve this thing? How do I troubleshoot this thing? Which is what basketball is. Troubleshooting, problem solving, all of that. It's fun.
Yeah.
Okay, spacing. Number four, the constraint that you can add to your games, spacing. We have a ton of these in our drill book, in our member community. Canada 4v4 is a really popular one that we've used where there's six slots, but only four people. So you can only be in a certain space at a certain time. But if your team is working on spacing, this is very important to race in space, to drive in space. Obviously, you can constrain the space that they're allowed to use. Again, no matter how many people are on the floor. I know Tyler's put some one-on-one variations of this in the drill book. So highly recommend checking those out as well.
Yeah. Okay. Here's one for on the flip side for defense. Spacing is the oxygen that lets your offense breathe. So it's imperative for offense. But defense, basketball is a game of opposites. Defense is we want to take away space and suffocate the offense. And so to really understand the value of this, and even going back to our taking away sevens and understanding how once we do lock the ball on one side of the floor, the jail side of the floor, how much easier it is to take away sevens. I would suggest playing 5-on-5 split line. Basically, the split line, the middle of the court, front rim to front rim, becomes out of bounds for the offensive team. And all five offensive players, they can run wherever they want, but if they catch it on the free side or the right-hand side of the court, they are out of bounds. All of a sudden, it's impossible for the offense to get off a seven, which then makes it really visceral knowledge for our defenders. Like, if we can just keep the ball in jail or on the jail side, we're not going to give up sevens. If we talk about that, instead of drill, drill, game, say game, 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 I would do a game sandwich out of it. Full space game, split line 5-on-5 game, epiphany, we've got to keep the ball here. Full space game, they're more committed to keeping the ball there, and they will improve. It goes back to that measurement. They're going to see drastic improvement in their ability to take away sevens between game one and game three. And we didn't do a single drill.
Yeah. Agreed. And one thing I want to clarify for some coaches, in case it's not clear, games are something you can win. Drills work on a technique, but a lot of these constraints, you can simply add any one of these constraints to a drill and have some sort of score, and that turns it into a game. So that you don't have to recreate the wheel. You don't have to come up with all of these new things. Like, take what you have, add a constraint, have a winner. And that is that plus one that you're using that you can go for. Last but not least.
I'll say this as well. Like, games should create intrinsic motivation for players to drill. If extrinsically or externally, we as a coach demand that they go drill something, they won't have the same level of intent or intensity as they would once they feel the pain of failure in a game. In all competitive endeavors, sport being, you know, the one we're talking about right now, like, until someone just goes and gets beat and they they get exposed by their inability to shoot, finish, guard, whatever. They won't have that intrinsic motivation to go and just drill that out. Because here's the reality. In a team practice setting, there's never enough time for an individual to acquire a skill and drastically improve it. That must happen on their own time. I believe that it is our job as a team coach to create the pain points for those players and identify you will not play until you can lock the ball left. You will not play until you can knock down an open seven from the corner. We create that pain for them through the failure of games. And then they have the motivation to go on and improve that skill on their own. And yeah, we'll get in the gym with them outside of team practice time. We'll support. But like, that's really when individual drilling, block drilling works. You know, my daughter, Charlie, who's an excellent 10-year-old basketball player, is cursed by her own excellence right now. She is not drilling on her own nearly enough with whatever ball handling, finishing, shooting, because she hasn't felt the pain of failure. She's one of the best players in most games that she's in. So what's my job is I'm trying to find a game where she fails as much as possible so that she feels that pain and that motivation.
Yeah, that's so good. It's like games create moments. Moments are memorable. Memories are what sticks. And so whatever sticks is what transfers, whether it's moments that just elate you and you enjoy it enough to want to keep going, or they hurt you enough that you want to get better. And when we talk about, this has come up in the community as well a couple times, scaffolding, spiraling, zone of proximal development. Really, that's all this is making it hurt enough that they need to get better, but make it fun enough and they're successful enough that they want to keep going.
Yes.
So finding that zone.
Yeah. And that's that second part, because if Charlie was only failing, she also might quit because there's no joy of achievement. Like, you've got to find both. Like, she primarily has the joy of achievement. I've got to find more challenge, right? I guess it'd be this way. I got to find more challenge, right? But if you're only finding challenge, you've got to find that sweet spot where there also is the joy of achievement. And that's really our job as a coach. And you do that all through games.
Yeah. All right. Last but not least, number 5 constraint you can add into a game is something to do with communication. This is related to leadership. We all want communication. We want it on the defensive end, the offensive end. We want it on the bench. We want it in practice. We want it everywhere. We want leadership. And so that can also be part of your game. There can be points assigned to that. There can be limitations so that it gets it out of the traditional captain's mouth and into other people's. Tyler, I was thinking about even the plant game that we've played at some of our team camps and how revealing it is to put a constraint on what people can do, what they can say, how they can say it, and what that reveals and how that transfers to the game is really, really fun.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll give you that one example. So we did these things where we planted a type of player through hidden cards and they had to go play a game. And these were negative plants, like players that couldn't rebound, never got back on defense, had to walk everywhere on the court, players that shot it every time they touched the ball, they couldn't pass it. All these things that would hinder a team from winning a game. And it's hilarious because teammates would recognize these negative attributes. And the only way to get them to stop doing that bad thing was they had to communicate with them. They had to use their name, encourage them to do the opposite and give them a touch. And until they did those things, the plants would continue doing the negative thing. And they would do the negative thing and their teammates would recognize it and like laugh or roll their eyes or look over at the coach, but wouldn't actually talk to them to fix it. It's just such an epidemic, a lack of communication. And you know, if people don't talk, it's because they don't know how, they don't know what to say. And so it just identified they didn't know how to communicate. And so, I mean, that would be a very specific constraint you could utilize around communication, is requiring communication to eliminate this negative thing. I'll give one more that I really like to use is a word I try to stay away from, but I rarely organize the rotations for games or when we do drill work. So I'm not saying never drill. I'm saying try to replace as many drills as you can with games. There are times to drill, but whether it be a drill or a game, I do my best not to organize, because guess what organization requires? Communication. Where do we go after we go to this line? I don't know. Figure it out. The objective is keep playing fast. Find a way to do it. Which team is up? I don't know. Which team can communicate and get on the court fastest, right? What are the teams? I don't know. Have you organized them yet? And just allowing the messiness of them to organize, which will be slower at the beginning of your season, journey, program, but at the end will be faster when you don't have to organize 30 people in a gym.
Yeah. Take the pressure off, put it on the players, empower them. I think that's another reason. That's what games do. They empower players, and you got to just let your players disappoint you, but then also surprise you. Once you put the objective out there and you put a barrier in place, you're going to be disappointed, but then I think ultimately you are going to be pleasantly surprised at the outcome, at the long-term development, skill, IQ, game transfer, games. If you want more of them, come hang out in the Savvy membership. We have so many in the drill book. Even though it's called the drill book, there's a lot of games in there, and we
it's called the drill book because that's what coaches understand it to be.
Yeah,
it actually is called the game book.
Exactly.
I'm making out, and there's games and drills in there. I guess we'll keep the drill book, but I'd like to call it the game book.
Well, I know the conversation will continue in our community. Coaches are asking kind of specific to their personnel, to the time of season, like what game is helpful, what constraint is right for me. So if our ideas didn't resonate with you yet, or you're looking for a specific recommendation, that's what our community's for. That's what our consulting's for. Is we can talk you through it. We can meet with you, get to know your program specifically, and support you through that IQ and development. It's fun for us. It's fun for you. It's fun for the players. So highly recommend.
Yeah. And as this is coming out, we have our 7-day free trial on. Head to savvycoach.com. Just come check it out. Go look at the drill book. Free for 7 days. Hopefully we add enough value to you in 7 days that you choose to stick around with us. Come join hundreds of other coaches all across the world who are getting savvy. Savvy means to have deep knowledge, mastery of a subject. A savvy coach that is mastering, is on the road to mastery of this coaching thing. So come get more savvy with us. We're on that road as well. And hopefully we can walk together.
Until next time,
stay savvy.